Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's suggestible pod.
It is.
Time.
It always is. It's always a suggestible pod time on this podcast. And that's why we do a show where we say, hey, we've been watching some things. We've been reading some things. We've been doing some things. We've been saying some things.
Correct.
We've been walking some things. We've been talking some things. We've been chalking some things.
We're like your personal shoppers for Netflix and other assorted things, including eatable things, which I have this week. I also have a cold. I'm Claire. You're James. We're married. Should we get on with recommending them some stuff? They don't want to hear this banter.
I think we should. Have you ever had a personal shopper?
No.
Mm.
You have. Me and your mother. You're laughing because that's actually very true.
I buy all my own clothes now because, Claire, I'll have you know that you can just buy them online and you have to interact with
anybody. Yeah, which is why you've ended up with two pairs of cargo pants and military boots that make you look like a G.I. Joe that you're about to
They're really comfortable.
And then with the farm. You wear like checkered farm shirts, so then you look like you're about to work on a farm, except you've never worked a manual labor day in your life.
They're not military boots. They're just boots. Like hiking boots, they're getting around boots.
Okay, let me paint a picture for you, listener. They are black with laces. They're like ankle boots.
They're grey.
Okay, well, charcoal. And they're like lace up all the way. His dad, who actually did work as a farmer and knows things, said to him, why didn't you go to Bunnings and get the workman's boots that have a zip on the sides so you don't have to keep lacing them up like a fool? And you said, I hadn't thought of that.
No, I did think
that.
Because I don't want to buy my...
Never worked a day in your life.
My shoes from Bunnings. Fucking Bunnings of all places.
It's a hardware chain.
Bunnings should change its name to Dropkick City.
Okay. I love Bunnings. Anyway, off topic.
Right.
But yes, this episode is definitely not sponsored by Bunnings, though I do love them. I love Bunnings. It's my happy place. Okay, side note, extra story about to prove my point. I don't know how we got into this, but I will continue. You rang me the other day because I asked you to mow the lawn and
yes.
You rang me and said, I can't find the lawnmower. And I said, it's in the shed. And you said, we have a shed?
No, I knew we had a shed, but I'd forgotten.
No, because you never go in there because all of the tools that we own are mine. And I have set the whole thing up. You don't even know what's in there.
To clarify, when you said we have a shed, I didn't then go, what? I remembered at that point we had a shed. So I did forget, but when you reminded me, I did remember that
you
we
had
have a
never,
shed.
Can you admit that you had never actually looked in that shed
I've looked
before?
In that shed. It's just got like potting mix and like a rake and shit.
And tools and a shovel and a lawn aerator.
I don't do any of that shit.
And like big secateurs and a hammer and my toolkit.
You know why I don't like doing any of that
shit? Lawnmower and hay for the garden.
Because my family for probably like 2,000 years did that shit. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not doing it. I'm staying indoors. I don't want to get out there. And you know why? Because also I don't care. Like, let everything overgrow. Good. It should. Why does everything have to be neat and tidy? Why do we have to mow our lawns every week or whatever?
Why do you have to cut your beard and order ridiculous clothes online? Anyway, this is beside the point. Let's get on with your suggestible, my friend, my soft-handed friend.
I got very calloused hands, Claire.
From working out
in my indoor gym. But, okay, so are you familiar with Calvin and Hobbes? I'm sure you are.
No. How much I don't know
you
about
You know Calvin things. And Hobbes. It's a cartoon. It started in the 80s. It ended in like the early 2000s, I want to say. By Bill Watterson. It's about a little boy called Calvin. He's got spiky hair and he's got a pretend tiger friend and they go on adventures.
It's not Calvin the Chipmunk.
No, it's not Calvin. You're thinking of Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Which is an excellent cartoon and show, by the way.
No, it's not.
I love
actually.
That Theodore with
you
the
know
glasses.
Calvin and Hobbes. This is Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, yeah, I've kind of seen it around.
Yeah, anyway,
I never watched it.
Bill Watterson created
it. He's got a tiger. He's blonde.
Yeah, but it's not just like your standard like Garfield kind of comic. It's like it says something and it was incredibly popular and the guy behind it, he never sold out. Like so that's why you don't see any like merch for it or movies or anything, even though there could be because it's hugely popular. Anyway, the reason I talk about that is because in that it's about a boy and he's got a lovely family and he's got a stuffed tiger, which he imagines to be a real tiger, and they go on adventures. Anyway, Mason recommended this comic to me last year, and the second volume has come out this year. It's called Spencer and Locke. It's by David Papose.
I like how you said that. Papose. Well,
that's his name.
I propose that you find out where the shed is. I don't know why I'm sounding like Mason now. Sorry.
I know.
I have a cold.
Now I know where it is, but if I ever forget, I'll know who to call.
Okay, anyway, go back to your stuffed tiger and your little boy story.
Okay, so, but this... Jesus Christ. You're mean when you're sick.
I know. I just haven't seen the light of day. I haven't got out in my garden today.
Yeah, you know what? Get out there and dig yourself a grave and bloody lie down, mate. I tell you that much.
Maybe I will.
Yeah. Anyway.
Who will mow your lawn then?
Spencer and Locke. I don't know one ever. But Spencer and Locke, right, is it's kind of like a knockoff of Calvin and Hobbes where what if Spencer and Locke, when he was a kid, this boy was like he had bad parents. Like he wasn't treated very well and his parents were mean and like abused him or whatever. And he grew up and he kept the imaginary tiger as a mate. So his imaginary friend is called Locke and it's a 7 foot tall blue talking panther. But what's happened to this guy is, as an adult, he's become a detective and he goes around solving grisly murders with the help of an imaginary 7 foot tall panther. So it's this crime noir story of this dude with this imaginary friend that nobody sees. Also, isn't real. So he's crazy. Like he's gone mad.
Yeah.
Like he's clearly
broken.
Does
he walk down the street going, "Walk like a man"?
No, it's not like the movie Heart and Souls with Robert Downey Jr. But the thing about having the thing about him having Locke is he's actually really helpful because he kind of gives him like confidence and like physical strength in a way when he knows him there. Locke has his own personality.
Knows that he's there.
Yeah. So Locke has his own personality. So when the crime scene, he can figure out things that Spencer can't. Even though it is him, they're like two entirely different characters that exist in this world, even though one of them is entirely fictional and cannot actually do anything.
So the panther doesn't actually like move anything in the story. It's the all a fiction
not real.
Of his imagination.
But he does carry around this stuffed toy in his pocket, this blue panther. And we also get these Calvin and Hobbes style flashbacks where like Calvin's always getting into trouble and not doing his homework. But so you get these like friendly cartoon style flashbacks, like in the style of Calvin and Hobbes. And then like something terrible happens, like his parents will lock him in a basement or whatever and things like that. Yeah. Anyway, it's really great. And I didn't realize that the second volume was out, and it is. It's on Comixology, but it's really worth reading. So yeah, Mason recommended that like a year ago, but I thought it'd be a good thing to bring up.
That legitimately sounds like something that I would like.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Maybe you should ease yourself in with Calvin and Hobbes.
Okay. I'll start with Calvin and Hobbes, which reminds me of Garfield or something, but it's not.
Yeah,
that
it's not
kind
like
of
Garfield.
Esque.
Like Garfield was like good at one
or
point.
Or Peanuts? Does it have the vibe of like Peanuts?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I think Charlie it's better Brown. Than all of those.
And better than Snoopy.
It says something like Calvin Hobbes says things about things that you like about going outdoors and appreciating things and not doing things just because everybody else does them and things like that. Calvin Hobbes is actually really great.
Those are all my favorite things.
Yeah.
You say them in such a flat way.
Well,
the
you know,
great
look,
outdoors
I know,
is wonderful. You're going camping soon.
Don't even start, Claire. Do not even start.
You should wear your military style boots and your cargo pants.
Maybe I will.
Here is the problem with cargo pants that this is another reason why. You used to wear cargo pants all the time when we first started dating, and then you stopped wearing them because I used to come with you to buy all your clothes. You've only just started them again. Let me finish. The reason that cargo pants are the worst idea in the world is that if you don't like ironing, which you don't, and you don't have a wife that will do it for you, which you certainly don't, because I like to mow the lawn instead, you need to iron the pockets. And so what you do now is wash the pants, and now the pockets are all weird and sticky uppy.
Yeah, the thing is, Claire,
mate,
you don't have to iron anything. And because I don't work
I know,
a real job,
I know I don't.
I don't have to do jack shit, and so I don't. I haven't picked up an – I pick up an iron maybe once a year to iron
lift
a shirt
it,
for going to a wedding that I don't want to go to. Like that's the extent of my ironing, Claire. Ironing
all
is
right.
An absolute – rot and a waste of time. And I don't know why.
That's why I don't understand why you bought cargo pants.
Because they're good and they're comfy and they're slim fitting and they're tapered at the bottom.
Do you put anything in those giant pockets?
I do actually. I put my wallet in there. It's better than sitting on your back pocket. It can throw out your spine or whatever if you do it for a long time.
All right. Okay.
Anyway, what's your crap thing?
Enjoy your cargo pants. What? I've got many great things. The first of which is pizza toast.
God. You didn't invent pizza toast.
I know I didn't, but I thought I did. So back in the 90s, when I would come home from school and we had like tomato sauce and cheese and that was about it in the fridge, I used to toast my toast and then put tomato sauce or ketchup and then dried herbs, a bit of basil, then cheddar, and then you put it under the grill. And the whole point of it, the key is that you have to toast the bread first. It comes out like the best version of pizza, except for if you actually ordered pizza. But when you're a kid, you can't. And it's delicious and great. And for some reason, I think because I was getting sick, I had a craving for it. And I hadn't had it since like the 90s. And I made it yesterday. And it was so friggin' delicious. I took a photo and put it on Instagram. So many people
do
it.
Got a big reaction.
Turns out, everyone's on the pizza toast bandwagon. Mm. Either like Ben Chinapan who edits for you, just put on my Twitter, oh my God, which means I think he's part of the generation like the millennials that never made pizza toast.
He probably made pizza toast.
Do you reckon?
I'll ask him.
I felt like he didn't. But then a lot of other people who were like of our generation.
It's also a good
and
like
old,
student snack for when like you're broke and stuff.
Yeah. It's brilliant. And I mean, it was back in the day before you understood that ketchup and tomato sauce had all this sugar and salt.
Yeah, you can do it with
a
tomato, with a tomato paste.
Oh, mate, no. Paste. Nah, you need tomato sauce.
I used to do it, and I'm sure my mum has spoken all about this. You do it on pita bread.
Oh, here he goes.
As an alternative, which I think is much better than
you
toast.
You used to make this thing for me when we were first dating, which I actually thought was a revelation. It was pita bread.
Yeah.
And then you'd put the egg with the tomato sauce and then chopped
up. Yeah, you just make
green
it like a pizza.
Skin. It was like very specific and you couldn't deviate from the exact recipe with cheese on top in the oven.
I figured out exactly. I figured out the order. I could still make that. It's delicious.
And rue the day that I decided to add mushrooms.
My mum gets fancy now because she'll make some and like sometimes she'll come around and she's like, this one's got pesto and I'm like, put this in the bin. You don't know what you're doing.
I love pesto.
The idea is you use basic like ingredients. You don't get fancy because it's pita bread
classic.
Or toast. You know what
you
I mean?
Really just want the crispiness, the saltiness, the acidic of the tomato sauce and then the delicious cheese.
I agree.
Is there anything better than melted cheese? I don't think so.
Yeah, regular cheese is pretty good.
Nah. Yeah. It's got to be melted. Melted is definitely superior to regular cheese. Really.
Depends on the context.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, I'm going to continue on. So that was my recommendation for food, pizza toast, guys.
Everybody knows that one already. You may as well have said, I recommend water with ice.
A lot of people people were reminded. They were brought back just in similarly how you did it with your little boy and tiger nostalgia walk that you just did before. I can't remember the name of it. Hobbs?
Yeah,
Hobbs. Hobbs, no, there we go. Anyway, I'm
Spencer
bringing back pizza toast. Anywho.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My second recommendation is a TV show that I've been watching today while I've been feeling sick. And my friend Chanel recommended it to me ages ago and I was putting, you know how you kind of put it off and I finally dived in and
yeah, like the
boy,
lawn.
It's really like the lawn.
Like the lawn, yeah.
All right, here he goes. Anyway, The Good Fight. It's on Amazon Prime at the moment. I'm sure you can get it in lots of places. It's actually the sequel to The Good Wife, which I haven't watched, but I've heard is quite good.
I've heard it's all right.
Okay, yeah, well, exactly. But this, The Good Fight, is brilliant. The first opening scene is just as Trump is being inaugurated, basically. So that's kind of like the opening scene. Diane, who is played by Christine Baranski, she is brilliant, is watching television as he's being inaugurated. And that kind of sets the scene for the rest of the series.
She's a big fan.
Yeah, well, so it's set in the US, obviously in Chicago. She loses everything in a kind of big suit. Well, not a suit. She loses everything, like all her money from a Ponzi scheme.
She puts it all in a big suit and then leaves
the
suit.
She does. She loses the suit by the side of the road. Anyway, so she was working for this very high-powered law firm. She was like the CEO or equivalent. Anyway, and then because she retires and then loses all her money in a Ponzi scheme, she has to go back into law. And because she was embroiled in this scheme, no one will hire her. And she ends up working in an African-American firm.
Right.
Yeah, in Chicago. And it kind of unfolds from there. It talks a lot about politics, about race, as you know, gender, about that whole thing that you love, you know, talking about the left and the far right and how everyone's yelling at each other and how to find a middle ground.
I love it.
The cast.
I'm not about that middle ground, because what's the middle ground between like the end of the world through global warming and just pretending it's not happening?
Yeah.
It's still death.
I know. Anyway, the cases that are brought are quite interesting in that way, because it's set in that kind of post-Trump era of America. There's also obviously your sexy romance between
sexy romance.
Different litigators and lawyers. There's
so
a lot of
sexy,
courtroom,
so
sexy courtroom Ooh. Scenes. I just really like the cast is very diverse.
Is any of the cast carry over from The Good Wife?
I actually haven't seen The Good Wife. I know that Diane Krasinski is is from The Good Wife. Maya Rose Leslie, who is from Game of Thrones.
Oh, she's the redhead.
Jon Snow. What does she say?
You know nothing,
Jon Snow.
They're married in real life.
Yeah, they are. Well, she's fantastic in this. She plays Diane's niece. Goddaughter.
I heard she sucks.
All right, well, whatever. You don't know. There's also Erica Tazel, Kush Jumbo, Deloy Lindo are all really incredible as well. And it's just a great fun. It's fun, but then it also looks at some deeper issues, which are quite interesting. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. I've almost finished season one. There's 3 seasons.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Claire, you'll appreciate this. I just saw this on my Twitter feed. Dan Andrews, who's the Premier of Victoria, said pads and tampons are essential as toilet paper and soap, and so from this week we're supplying them to public schools free of charge.
Oh,
one of the few places in the world that does that.
Brilliant. Daniel Andrews, I really like him as our Victorian Premier.
I don't know if I like him, but I hate him less than everybody else.
Okay.
And that's good enough for me, because you can't trust them as far as you can.
Well, I think he's done some good things.
I agree.
He tweeted recently. He's got quite a good Twitter feed. Like, he's quite sort of snappy.
I mean, he's got a pretty
good
team.
The last thing
he announced Twitter feed.
Yeah, well, exactly. But, you know, still leadership top down or whatever it comes from. His tweet recently when Paul Kelly was announced as playing the grand final was, "Hey Joe, this is Dan here," which is the opening line of one of his most famous songs. And I thought, that's kind of clever. I like that.
Well done, his team, who thought of that.
Well, anyway, a lot of them have really, like Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister, you know the scandal about when social media team.
Fuck that guy
he believes. Well, anyway, he's got a terrible social media team.
I know
team.
He does.
Remember that ridiculous scandal with the photo where he was wearing a pair of runners? They took a family photo. Then they realized that the runners were really dirty. And so they kind of superimposed these white runners over the top. But it just looked like someone had badly copy and pasted
the previous
runners
photo
on there.
Wasn't even that bad.
It really wasn't.
No one would have said anything.
No.
You may want to get a few comments like, no, Dunlop's idiot, but
yeah,
oh my god,
I know.
Anyway, Colin, can you link that photo below, please? Because people should check that out.
It is pretty hilarious. Okay,
next thing is something that we watch together. It's called Late Night. It's on, I believe it's on Amazon now. What is it? It's for home release. But basically, the focus of Late Night is it's a story that's written by Mindy Kaling. I can't remember who directed. I should have brought that up. But basically, Emma Thompson plays the only female late night host in the modern day of the US of America. And her show, it's kind of been going downhill for 20 years, just kind of treading water, doing your standard late night stuff of like, look at this duck. This ducks likes other ducks. You know, they show videos of ducks often doing things.
Yep. So the director, just so I
Here
can...
Here we go. What
is,
do we got?
Nisha Ganatra.
Okay, right.
Yeah, she's a Canadian-American film director.
Excellent. Very good. But
Indian descent.
Of Indian descent, yes. Yeah, so the idea is that because her show's going downhill, she's going to get cancelled and replaced by like this obnoxious comedian played by the guy from a bunch of things. But it is good to.
He's in The Mindy Project, which is one of my favorites. The Mindy Project was also written by Mindy Kaling.
Yes, correct.
And stars her. And that's
like Barinholtz, I want to say. Anyway, so because the show's kind of going downhill and she's going to get cancelled, they start just doing things that are more interesting. And off the back of that, it's because Mindy Kaling has been hired as the first female writer, I think, ever in the history of the show.
Correct.
So there's a writer's room. It's like 12 blokes. And they're not terrible by any stretch.
White dudes, by the
White
way,
dudes,
as well.
Yeah. But they're not terrible by any stretch, but it's just like the same voice and the same jokes and the same everything. And look, it's good, but I think it's really good when it focuses on the Emma Thompson character. And less good when it focuses on like the interns and things like that. I think maybe the focus of the movie should have really been on Emma Thompson's role in this industry, because in that industry, it's still a very male dominated space. I don't think there is a female late night host. No, at the moment. Not, well, not, certainly not you're one more, that prominent.
No, yeah. You're, a late night host is more likely to be called Jimmy than be female. Like, yeah, there's
that's,
just none.
That's probably, yeah, that is true.
Yeah, look, it's funny. I disagree with you because I think the writer's room is actually a lived experience of Mindy Kaling. She yeah. was hired as a diversity hire, which is kind of one of the themes in the show. Mm. And it's the same. It's not only the late night talk show host as a woman that's unusual in this film. It's a woman and a woman of colour being on a writing staff. Most teams yes. of writers in comedy still are dudes.
I agree, but I don't think it handles it very – I don't think it's a very interesting take on it at all. I don't – I think that's the least interesting part of the movie because I don't think it's really saying anything we don't know at this point. But, you know, maybe that's not true. Maybe
yeah, look, I disagree with you. I mean, I listened to one of my favourite podcasts, The Guilty Feminist – Deborah Frances White hosts that and she interviewed Mindy Kaling about the film. It was only a short interview. Mm. But Deborah was saying that as a female comedian, when she was watching the film, she broke down crying because she is a producer and a film writer as well and works a lot behind the scenes in Britain particularly in comedy.
Right.
And she broke down, she said, because the way that the men speak to Mindy was so reminiscent of experiences that she's felt in comedy because they're very chauvinistic, even though they seem like – and it's interesting that no, you think that, they seem like – like quite sort of innocuous, funny, kind of laid back guys.
No, I didn't know. I just think they're whatever. Yeah, but no, I can. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And it's interesting because I think when you're the minority in a room, harmless banter like that between blokes seems really innocuous and fine and funny and a bit like, oh, that was a little bit mean. Ah, well, who cares? Move it along. But when you're the minority in a room like that, it can seem a lot more hostile than maybe the people saying those things intended. Like I've felt like that internally, even though there's been absolutely no malicious intent in a room ever when there's a whole room of guys and it's just me. No malicious intent at all. The guys are just joking around and it's fine. But being the only woman in a room, and then I can't speak to also being a person of colour. I can't speak to what that would feel like or being a minority in that way. But certainly in comedy, being the only woman in the room, you automatically feel on the back foot you automatically feel like, and Mindy talks about this, that you have to prove that not only you are funny, but your entire gender is funny.
Right, okay.
And your entire race possibly is funny.
Yeah.
And if you mess up, then that's it, you're written off completely. So it's not even just that you might not be funny and you lose your job, they may never hire another woman again or they'll think twice before they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that it's just not a, like, I don't think it's an engaging part of the story. From those things are all true. I don't disagree with any of that.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of what the story that is telling, I don't think it's the people in that narrative are particularly interesting is what I'm saying.
I think she deliberately wrote the male writers to be not that interesting.
Yeah, which is why I'm saying the Emma Thompson stuff where it talks about how, because she's approaching 60, you know what I mean? She's been on the decline for years. She's like, if this job goes away, what do I even do? I'm not going to get another job hosting late night. You know what I mean? I took this job 20 years ago and I was at the top of my game and it's, you know, and it's just.
And she's had to fight tooth and nail.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the other part of it Deborah Frances White talked about and so did Mindy in that interview, that Emma Thompson and Mindy represent two different sides of the same coin of women in comedy.
Yep.
So the older female, sounds terrible, the older female comedian who has had to battle and battle and battle to get there. And this might not be even represented in comedy. It could be in any industry. Women who rise to the top of their game and they're in their 60s have had to be hard as F.
Yeah.
Like they have fought tooth and nail
and
to get there.
And then people are like, what a bitch or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But they have to be a hard ass to be taken seriously.
All the late night hosts, the men, like I don't know about the current crop because they're all the same guy. But, but in the past, they're all like notoriously pricks, like all of them.
Yeah.
And you know, and there's a lot of talent there, obviously, but you don't really hear people talk about how Johnny Carson was a notorious prick because he was like the best, you know. Yeah. I mean, he was pre-Leno and pre-Letterman or whatever. Mm. But that's what I'm saying. But I think here's what I'm saying. That what I think is because then with the writers' room stuff, they go through the. Okay, she's going to have a relationship with this guy and turns out, you know, he's a jerk and, oh, they thought they had something special and then there's the guy that you think is a real jerk, he's not a jerk and what, like, that stuff, it's like, I don't care about any of that because I've seen it a million times.
Yeah. I agree with that. And like this, and this is a spoiler alert, but the sleazy guy that hits on her that you think he's nice turns out he's also slept with Emma Thompson's character. Mm. And that becomes a scandal towards the end of the film. I think the inclusion of that character, I agree, it was kind of predictable. I don't think they needed to resolve it in a nice relationshipy bow at the end.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I wondered whether that was also studio intervention in the script. I wonder. I don't know. Yeah. But it felt very Hollywood. Like, oh, she has to end up with somebody. But I do think the inclusion of the sleazy guy, that's something women often encounter in the workplace.
Yeah.
Is that kind of sleazy guy that you think is going to be an ally and turns out to be hitting on you.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was worth a watch. And Emma Thompson particularly is excellent.
Really? She sells the late night host thing as well.
Right? You want her to host a show.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of time when you see late night, like fake late night hosts or comedians, they're not very good, like on movies, you know, because there's something about taking the energy out of it when you're filming it in a different way and you haven't had that years of experience, it just comes across as odd.
Yeah, or flat.
I can't think of a specific example, but this doesn't feel like that. It feels like she's someone who's been doing this. Or also you even get the sense of like even when she's doing like jokes that aren't particularly good, she's good at making it look like they're not very good. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah. I know, like acting within acting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. I really liked how they made a statement about her most of the years that she was hosting the show, she wasn't sort of projecting anything about her real self. It was all kind of about jokes and witty banter and all that kind of thing. But now we've moved into an era where it's actually safe for her to talk about being a woman in the industry, being an older woman in the industry. And I think that was really interesting because I don't think 15, 20 years ago those kind of jokes could have been said because they would have been seen as her being like a whinging woman or whatever. Whereas as now after Me Too and all the things that have happened, it's a different landscape.
Mm.
And that actually made the show much better when she opened up about her experiences of going through, I know, menopause and all of those sort of jokes about women's rights and feminism, all of that stuff. Yeah, and also Emma Thompson is just great.
She's really great.
Everything. Yeah. I shared with you, I know you didn't find it funny, but I shared with you that article of her and Hannah Gadsby drunk skipping down the street, which I just love. She was doing the robot or something.
Mm.
So fun. And she's great in Love Actually.
She's really, that's an astounding performance. Yeah. And she's probably good in that Love Actually sequel. Oh, no, she's not in that because Alan Rickman died. They didn't do it. Another thing I thought was interesting about it, just really quickly, I know, do you want to do one more thing actually? Because we're running out of time. Yeah. Is that they talk about how if once you start getting personal and talking about things that you believe or things that you've experienced, those are things you cannot put back in the bottle once happened. And I've experienced this on like a much smaller scale, like really reluctant to say anything about yourself personally or any details about your life because people, not often, but they'll try to use them against you and or you can't, you become more vulnerable. And I don't like that aspect of entertainment. But a lot of time people demand it, like people kind of want to know more about you and insist and try to find things out about you online and then send you weird emails about things they might have found out about you and shit like that, which happens to me every now and then. And it's just, it's very
unsettling.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, part of it comes with the territory, right? I guess. It's about putting in your boundaries.
Don't fucking do it is what I'm saying. Leave me alone.
Yeah, leave you alone. I mean, I do also think there's power in vulnerability.
100%. But
I really believe there's a great Brené Brown talk on vulnerability.
Yeah.
But
there are people who don't get that is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
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 And they don't have that idea of boundaries.
What you're saying is you're a grumpy old man and you want everybody to leave you the F alone.
Yeah.
So you can wear your cargo pants and mow the lawn.
These are great cargo pants and I will not hear a word against them.
All right, we're almost out of time, but I'll just quickly sneak in my
Let's
one.
Do it.
Is that all right?
Yeah, of course.
So I've been reading a book called Poster Boy by Peter Drew. He is an Australian street artist and I'm interviewing him this week actually for Just Make the Thing.
Yes.
His images are quite famous within Australia. He tends to run campaigns where he'll poster like 1,000 big posters around politics and identity and Australian culture. One he did was a massive image of Monga Khan, who is an Afghan cameleer. So Australia, before we had a train that ran from Adelaide all the way up to the top of Australia, we used to have camels and cameleers and Afghan cameleers who would ride camels to, you know, move goods from the bottom of Australia to the top, which, if you don't know Australia, is a hugely humongous journey through desert. So camels are perfect for it. And he had under the picture of Monga Khan was the slogan Aussie. And he did that with a lot of different sort of people from different backgrounds, all really old photos from a couple hundred years ago, sort of making a statement about Australian identity politics. His another famous poster of his was Real Australians Say Welcome, which is just in really large letters. Anyway, the book is a memoir. I found it really interesting because he's quite an angry guy. He's in his 30s now. He's an artist. But it was really interesting reading a book from someone who is completely different to me and who has tried to explore his own identity and then work through some of his own family crisis that happened to him when he was sort of younger and the family kind of secrets and things that happened to him through his artwork, but on a big scale on the kind of Australian cultural landscape. So he had started and the kind of era he started post-Trump and then how that kind of turned and moved forward from there. So his artwork has kind of changed. And that's been really interesting, his people's reaction to his artwork. He got arrested. He's done a lot of kind of risky things to get his street artwork out there. But I think for me, the most moving part of the book was reading about his emotional, you're looking at me like, I hate
no,
this.
I but, don't hate it at all.
But,
no, I really
his
don't.
His emotional kind of realization. And I feel like it speaks to a lot of young men who potentially, I think from the outside anyway, seem lost in culture at the moment in society and very, very angry.
Like, roles are shifted or are currently shifting and there is that kind of sense of what am I supposed to do or be at this point in time for a lot of people.
Yeah, and he really speaks to that. I think particularly for young men it's an important book to read because he kind of talks about his father and the kind of man his father was and then how he feels he's very different to his father in lots of ways but similar, but the culture has shifted completely from when his father was growing up. And then also the culture of silence in his family, so no one talked about emotions or how they felt.
Oh, what a dream. I know. Oh, my God.
No, imagine? But what it really does to a family to relationships when you hide who you really are. You know, his brother comes out as gay and, it's totally the antithesis to what I believe, which is like put all your emotions out there all of the time.
But it's interesting of all those, not without getting into specifics of the things that you've talked about, I can definitely see parallels with some of those things in your life as well. Like, I don't think you're completely removed from some of his experiences.
No, absolutely not. But I think I do have dealt with them in a very different way because I'm all like emotions are things that you should talk about all the time. And if you keep things hidden, then they fester. Whereas if you get them out in the light and talk to people about them, it's so much better. Anyway, he ends up realizing that love is the key to it all, loved. Anyway, but it's actually not corny. We're at 32 minutes. I'll stop talking. But that book is Poster Boy by Peter Drew.
Excellent. Okay, Well, that's the show. And look, if you want to reach the show, you can on Suggestible Pod on all our social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter probably. But you can also review the show via the app on your phone. You can, if you've got an iTunes app, you can do it right out of there. This is from Flat954. It says, well, that was surprising. After the Weekly Planet 300th episode, Suggestible autoplayed and I was too lazy to reach my phone, so I gave it a listen. And the chemistry between James and Claire was both a joy and a reality check that I need to talk to my wife more. So there you go.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that we were reminded that you need to talk to your wife more.
You should talk to your wife more.
You totally should. She's awesome, I'm assuming.
Even if she's a shrill nightmare.
What the hell?
I said Claire, God. Like you.
What? Yeah, I am very. No, I'm not shrill. Bloody hell. Did you learn nothing?
I've never learned anything and I never will.
So, August on Twitter. Thanks, August. Hey, Suggestible Pod, thanks for some great suggestions. I think you would enjoy Rachel Monroe's book, Savage Appetites, 4 True Stories of Women, Crime and Obsession. Through some fascinating interviews, Munro explores the modern appeal of the true crime genre.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Anyway, you're at Claire Tonti on
Instagram and at Mrs. Sunday Movies on Twitters.
And I'm at Mr. Sunday Movies on all platforms. Thank you for listening to Suggestible. And remember, you don't have to mow your lawn or talk to your wife.
What? You do, however, have to eat pizza, toast, and wear cargo pants, apparently.
But if you do mow the lawn, it's a good excuse to not talk to your wife because she's
this
like,
this has been going on for way too long.
I can't anymore for the lawnmower. All right, let's end this show.
All right, I need to go back to bed.
I need to pick up our son from whatever that thing
see
is.
See you later, doing. Alligator.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.